morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. My name is Mary Woolley, President and CEO of Research America, and I'm so honored to serve as your host this morning of the first National Institutes of Health Summit on the Science of Eliminating Health Disparities. Yes, indeed. This summit is sponsored by the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities in collaboration with the other NIH institutes and centers. Sponsorship by the NIH means sponsorship by the American people. There is, in my view, no greater privilege nor a greater inspiration for this meeting than serving the interests and meeting the expectations of the American public. Before we proceed with this official opening of the summit, let us be mindful to turn off or silence all cellular phones and pagers. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, please stand and welcome the Honor Guard of the Military District of Washington for the presentation of colors. They will be followed by Ms. Kiara Spearman and Mr. Danton Whitley, who will sing the national anthem. we thank Kiera and Danton for that beautiful rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. I am honored to preside over this opening ceremony and, as the host, help you kick off the NIH Science of Eliminating Health Disparities Summit. As some of you may know, Research America is the nation's largest alliance working to make research for health a much higher national priority. I'm personally excited about this summit because for several years now, Research America has been keeping its fingers on the pulse of the nation's attitudes when it comes to health and research for health. We commissioned a survey recently to assess the temperament of the nation as it relates to health disparities. What you may see on a slide shortly is that 95% of the American public, 95%, feels that research to help us better understand and overcome health disparities is important. I am sure that everyone here this morning resonates with this sentiment and is ready to go to work to relegate disparities in health status to the history books. Today marks the beginning of 3 days of events designed to highlight recent achievements and ongoing research of individuals and groups making extraordinary contributions and employing various strategies to tackle the many diseases and health conditions that burden segments of our population. Whether well-known or yet unsung heroes, all of you who are toiling in research labs and clinics all over the world to understand and find solutions to the complex issues associated with health disparities, we salute you and we thank you for the example you set and the work you will do in future. I'd like to take a few moments now to acknowledge some of our dignitaries and special guests. I would like them to stand to be recognized, and I'll also ask, although I know it will be hard, that the audience hold your applause until all of our distinguished guests have been introduced. First, here on the dais, we have the Honorable Louis Sullivan, former Secretary of Health and Human Services, Dr. David Satcher, the 16th Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Bernadine Healy, former NIH Director, Dr. Harold Varmus, former NIH Director, Dr. Renard Kington, the current Acting Director of the NIH, Dr. John Ruffin, the Director of the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities, and Dr. Joyce Hunter, Deputy Director of the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities. Please honor our distinguished dignitaries. Now, with us in the audience, and again, I would ask these individuals to stand and all will be recognized together. In the audience, we have several of the NIH Institute and Center directors, deputy directors, and leaders of offices within the NIH Office of the Director, including Dr. Stephen Katz, director of the National Institute of Arthritis and Musculoskeletal and Skin Diseases, Dr. Roderick Pettigrew of the National Institute of Biomedical Imaging and Bioengineering, Dr. Griffin Rogers of the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, Dr. Richard Hodes of the National Institute on Aging, Dr. Duane Alexander, director of the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, Dr. Jeremy Berg of the National Institute of General Medical Sciences, Dr. Thomas Insel, Director of the National Institute of Mental Health, Dr. Josephine Briggs of the National Center on Complementary and Alternative Medicine, Dr. Story Landis, Director of the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, Dr. Patricia Grady, Director of the National Institute of Nursing Research, Dr. Kenneth Warren, representing the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, Dr. Michael Johnson, representing the Fogarty International Center. Dr. Hugh Auchincloss, representing the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Dr. Sally Rocky from the Office of Extramural Research. Dr. Janine Clayton from the Office of Research on Women's Health. Dr. Christine Bachrach from the Office of Behavioral and Social Sciences Research. Dr. Michael Gottesman from the Office of Intramural Research, and several other individuals representing the various NIH institutes and centers. We also have current and past members of the NCMHD Advisory Council. If you would all please stand and be recognized. Thank you. Now, it is also a high honor, and we are pleased to have with us members of the Diplomatic Corps, representing actually just a small portion of the international reach of the NIH's health disparities activities. Now, if the following would please stand if you are present. His Excellency Leopold Gangsi Lekta of the Embassy of Botswana. Mr. Zhu Jin of the Embassy of China. Dr. Jacques Drucker, Counselor, the Embassy of France. Dr. Debapriya Dutta, the Counselor of the Embassy of India. His Excellency Peter N.R.O. Ogego, the Embassy of Kenya. Mr. Mohamed Maiga of the Embassy of Mali. Mr. Antonio Ortiz, Head of Section Economic Affairs, the Embassy of Mexico. His Excellency Roy Ferguson and Mrs. Dawn Ferguson of the Embassy of New Zealand. Dr. Numonde Zundu of the Embassy of South Africa. Reynaldo Reyes, Counselor for Political Affairs of the Embassy of Peru. Thank you so much for your hard work and for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I would like to introduce to some of you and to present to those who know him well the visionary behind this magnificent event, Dr. John Ruffin, the director of the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities. Dr. Ruffin is the federal official responsible for leading the minority health and health disparities research activities at the National Institutes of Health. For more than 25 years, he has dedicated his career to the improvement of health for racial and ethnic minority populations and to the elimination of health disparities. His journey to transform the NIH approach to minority health and eventually health disparities issues began almost 20 years ago as the Associate Director of the NIH Office of Minority Programs. From the OMP, with a budget of $1.5 million, to the Office of Research on Minority Health, to what is today the congressionally mandated National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities, with a $200 million budget, Dr. Ruffin has been central to the evolution of the NIH Health Disparities Research Agenda. Working with colleagues within the NIH and beyond, he has planned and brought to fruition the largest biomedical research program in the nation aimed at improving minority health and eliminating health disparities. John, one of your former NIH colleagues, couldn't be here today, but sent his greetings, which I will read now in part. This is from Dr. Bill Raub, formerly at the NIH and now science advisor to the Secretary of Health and Human Services. He says in part, "John, I take vicarious pride in having been one of those who persuaded you to throw in your lot with the NIH. I'm delighted that it proved a nurturing milieu for expression of your intellect, energy, and leadership toward reducing health disparities between majority and minority populations. Shakespeare noted that past is prologue, and in this case, a productive track record promises an even more productive future. Best wishes to you and our colleagues for continued success. It's signed Bill Rao. I am now pleased to present to you, ladies and gentlemen, one of the most passionate and committed individuals in the field of health disparities, Dr. John Ruffin.
Thank you, Mary, and good morning. How inspiring it is to see so many people here today who have an interest in health disparities. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome you to the NIH Summit, The Science of Eliminating Health Disparities. This is the first time since the establishment of the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities that all of the NIH institutes and centers and their partners have come together to collectively showcase the breadth of our accomplishments in health disparities. And just look and see the number of individuals who are here today. We're excited about this summit because you have played a critical role in where we are today as a nation and a global community in addressing health disparities. You come with unique perspectives, strategies, experiences from different backgrounds, disciplines, communities, and countries. But you come with a common interest and vision that we can, and one day we will, eliminate health disparities. Our distinguished guests on the stage have been the leaders whose influence and fervor set the groundwork for this milestone in our history. From the creation of an Office of Minority Program at NIH, which Dr. Louis Sullivan called for in 1990, to the establishment of the Minority Health Initiative under the leadership of Dr. Bernardine Healy, which set the stage for collaborations with the Institutes and Centers on Minority Health, to having the elimination of racial and ethnic health disparities as an objective of the Healthy People 2010 goals set by Dr. David Satcher, to the establishment of the NCMHD under the leadership of Dr. Harold Varmus, to the efforts of Dr. Kenneth Marasugu to curb underage drinking and protect our children from secondhand smoking. These are some of the principals with whom I worked over the years, who supported and propelled us in advancing health disparities research at the National Institutes of Health. But today, I, along with the other NIH Institute and Center directors and office heads, under the leadership of the acting NIH director, Dr. Renard Kington, are proud to convene this summit to highlight the NIH scientific progress in health disparities. Our achievements are not only about the efforts of the National Institutes of Health, but about every individual, every organization, every agency, community, or country that's represented here today. It's about the strength of our partnerships. Together, we have made advances in research and research training, capacity building, and outreach. But it's not enough. As we prepare for the next chapter in our quest to eliminate health disparities, we will continue to build on our success. Let me show you a video that we put together that I think speaks for itself, and I hope captures the essence of our partnership.
Thank you. since I was one or two, and I've been hanging on, never knowing what to do. But now I can see it as clear as day. Things are gonna get better one day.
The NIH strategy to eliminate health disparities is embodied in three key elements. One, research to understand the disproportionate burden of disease among minority, poor, and rural groups. Two, research infrastructure to build a strong and diverse research enterprise of institutions, individuals, and communities. And three, outreach and information dissemination, translating research results into educational and clinical practice programs and policies. Despite our nation's scientific advances offering improved health and quality of life, racial and ethnic minorities, poor whites, and rural groups have not benefited equally from our medical progress due to a wide-ranging and interwoven web of disparities attributable to factors like race, socioeconomics, discrimination, environment, geography, and lack of access to health care.
The elimination of health disparities is a colossal mission. There are biological and non-biological factors that we must tackle involving multiple populations. To effect real solutions and be truly impactful, it will take vision, leadership, commitment, creativity, passion, and partnership. In 2000, the Congress created the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities. The NCMHD provides leadership for minority health and health disparities research at the National Institutes of Health. This is a charge we take very seriously. Our challenge over the years has been to convince people that health disparities exist, that they are real. Today, the NIH Health Disparities Strategic Plan allows us to synergize our efforts across the agency and to set the priorities. Today, health disparities is a vibrant part of research. The health disparities research workforce is stronger than it has ever been. We're making scientific progress. Our communities are now engaged in research. No longer is it just the traditional academic scientists. Community and faith-based groups are on board. Partnerships between research-intensive and minority institutions are blossoming. Beauty shops, barbershops, tribal groups, clinics, and hospitals are all now involved. The pulse of the nation and the world is on health disparities. Look at the interest that the NIH Science of Eliminating Health Disparities Summit has generated with almost 4,000 registrants. These are exciting times. We're at a turning point as a nation and a global community when there is profound momentum around health disparities. But we cannot become complacent. In about 30 years, minorities will be the majority population. And we have to ask ourselves, what will this mean for our health care system? What will be the economic impact on our nation when the majority of the population is sick, disabled, dying prematurely, and lacks access to medical care? The underrepresentation of minorities and disadvantaged population and the health profession and science is an issue we cannot afford to ignore. But imagine the opportunity that this challenge presents for each of us in achieving health equity for all populations. Our approach to health disparities cannot be static. We must continue to challenge ourselves to take new bold steps to bona fide solutions. It is time for us to chart a new course for health disparities. For that reason, the intersection and integration of science, practice, and policy is the theme of the summit. It is a new paradigm we will explore to help us connect, to connect the dots, working with our partners. No American should be left behind as it relates to health. And yet we know that when it comes to ethnic minorities, and not only ethnic minorities, but a number of poor whites in medically underserved communities suffer in this country a disproportionate burden of ill.
While diversity is one of America's greatest assets, one of its greatest challenges is reducing the disparities in health status among racial and ethnic groups compared to the population as a whole.
Well, I think health disparities research is critically important across the NIH, and in fact, every institute at the NIH, in my experience, is involved in some level of health disparity research, both intramurally as well as extramurally.
We've always felt that one cannot completely understand healthcare, medicine, or even policy in the absence of understanding communities in which individuals live.
Socioeconomically, many of the atrocities that African Americans and Latinos suffer, so do poor whites in many areas of our country.
Well, health disparities research are amongst the highest priorities in NIDCR. So much disease burden is found in a select few of the population. African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanic and Latinos, Asian and Pacific Islanders. Some of these diseases include obesity, diabetes, as well as kidney diseases.
Clearly, if you talk about the disease that looms very large on our consciousness, it's HIV/AIDS. And if you look at the disparity just in the incidence of this disease, we have 12% of the population is African American, and the number of new infections of the 56,300 infections each year in the United States, about 50% is in the African American population, about 40-some-odd percent in African American men, and close to 60-plus percent in African American women.
In the state of Tennessee, Mississippi Delta, in a county called Madison, there are individuals, particularly African Americans, in that county who suffer from tremendous disparities around diabetes and chronic kidney disease. We've seen since 1990 to 2006, their rate of diabetes per 100,000 rise from roughly 28% to 89%.
In this country, about a quarter of the population lives in rural America, but less than an eighth of the healthcare providers live in rural America. So we have the challenge to help ensure that they have access to the services they need and the health outcomes that they need in order to live healthy and productive lives.
African American and Hispanic girls are found to engage in less exercise and physical activity than white girls. What's the reason for this? Is it one of the reasons that's been postulated is access to health facilities, to gyms, to parks, whatever. So it's a matter of access, not whether they engage or not.
I think that we've begun in our country to move a little bit away from health disparities focused on ethnicity, and really beginning to recognize that our disparity issues are more socioeconomic.
A lot of people are poor, poverty. They don't have insurance. And if they don't have insurance, oftentimes they are not screened. So by the time their disease is detected, the disease is in a very advanced stage.
They never really attract the attention of the healthcare system.
That's absolutely correct.
One of the issues in global health is that we really feel that every life has equal value. That if we have treatments available, that we should really be thinking about how to make these available to everyone.
The name of the game has to be partnerships, working together, because I think at the end of the day, that's the only way you're going to be successful in having a big impact.
We cannot do this at Medicare and Medicaid by ourselves. Though we're the biggest health care payer in the world, we have significant influence on the health care system. We need to have partnerships and collaboration like the one we have with Dr. Ruffin.
So when you have a summit like this, and you have scientists, you have health professionals, you have advocates, you have educators, all coming together to try and take the different pieces for which they're responsible for and put them together.
It's a symbiotic relationship. The National Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities deals with developing and translating the science. What we do is to help with the outreach component of that. So when you talk about translating something from bench to bedside, we take it a step further. We talk about bench to bedside to the community.
But we know that our work is never done in isolation. In order for us to be successful at the end of the day, and we measure success by the impact on public health, we need to work collaboratively, collegially, with our partners here at the NIH. And certainly for our institute, that means NCMHD. We must work in partnership. And of course, John Ruffin and I have had a fabulous partnership surrounding the Jackson Heart Study for many of years. In fact, the Jackson Heart Study is co-funded equally between our two groups.
The collaboration with NCMHD is very important. We, for example, we do work with NICHD on fetal alcohol syndrome, on AIDS, HIV, with NIAID, and then with NCMHD specifically, we want to collaborate in the area of translation of science to service and in the area of prevention and interventions.
The NIH, along with the Indian Health Service and along with the work of John Ruffin, has greatly affected research in the tribal community, which then can be brought back, analyzed, and nationally distributed.
We've engaged in a number of collaborations to help move our health disparities research agenda forward. And of course, seminal to that has been the work that we've done together with the National Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities. As you might appreciate, when you're dealing with health disparities, it's not just about the anatomical site that you're worried about, but you have to deal with the whole person and the entire social structure that the person lives in. And so we turned to Dr. Ruffin and his colleagues early on.
Because osteoarthritis investigators or investigators involved in the osteoarthritis initiative made a concerted effort to involve members of minority communities when recruiting participants for the study, the additional data will help researchers look at osteoarthritis risk as it relates to people of different racial and ethnic backgrounds.
One of the things that I am quite proud of is that our work in developing partnerships between several of our leading cancer centers, major research universities, with those that underserved universities or minority universities. We have one in Puerto Rico, for example, with MD Anderson Hospital. We have relationships with Howard as another example.
The National Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities works largely with universities, but we complement each other in important ways because the university-based programs are producing knowledge that we have access to and our grantees have access to at the local level. So we need to have both of these streams, if you will, of programming and research and applied research and evaluation research going on in order to meet our goal of eliminating health disparities.
It's only through these broad-based initiatives are we really going to make an impact. Onesies and twosies around interventions within individual agencies will not make the monumental change.
Beginning in the late 1990s, around the time the National Center was created,
We pretty much told the research community no more descriptions. We actually want to get to solutions and solving problems. And that's where we had a very effective partnership with the National Center.
Both from the standpoint of the biological differences and the, quote, other differences.
We tackled serious issues such as HIV/AIDS. We tackled issues such as hepatitis B, which is seriously affecting the Asian American and Pacific Islander community. We're tackling diabetes and heart disease within the Hispanic and African American communities.
So by way of example, African American males suffer disproportionately from oral cancer. And part of this relates to the fact that the disease is often undetected in this group. And so working in the Institute, we have come up with a culturally sensitive set of educational materials.
So we make sure that the science that's being developed is translated appropriately from the bedside and then out of the bedside and into the community so that we empower the community effectively.
All that we wanted to do has been markedly enhanced by the participation and support from other organizations, most notably and largest from the National Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities. The co-funding that we've gotten from them is allowing us to conduct Wave 4 far more extensively and far more valuably than we would have otherwise.
What discoveries have been made? You know, in the prevention of HIV, last year, we learned that through trials done in Uganda with support from other institutes like NIAID, that circumcision can prevent the transmission of HIV.
We have the issue with inner city asthma, in which we have shown that by better education and getting people to take their medications and get care and avoid some of the antigenic triggers, again, very disparate in the African American and other minority population, we've been able to see a major decrease in hospitalizations associated with asthma among these among this population.
Another one is in Native Americans in Californians, and looking at why alcohol abuse and alcoholism is so high in that population. So it's a look at the gene environment interaction, and also based on that, then can you then target certain populations for treatment?
We also were committed to increasing the amount of research on health disparities and also increasing the number of minority health researchers. The minority nurses that we have tend to have a higher incidence of success rate of going on for further education. So the percent of them going on for PhDs and becoming researchers academically is high, and it's increasing.
It's like compound interest. If you invest in these people early and you let them mature and incubate, 20 years later, these babies that we trained have really become leaders in the field today.
Because of those relationships that they have had in developing their own career, will be better mentors for the students of the minority institution.
So there's a lot that we can learn, but we have to be in the field. We have to take science where the problems are. A Nigerian oncologist who works now in Chicago. In Chicago, and throughout the United States, African-American women present with breast cancer late. They come in with much more aggressive disease than a Caucasian woman. It takes an African and Nigerian oncologist to say, you know, this is what I saw in Nigeria. She found that, in fact, these cancers had different receptors. They were genetically different. And so when you see an African-American woman with fulminant disease, you can't just think of the same old treatment. You want to test for these markers and adapt the treatment accordingly. It's a benefit of global health research here to our own population.
But it's only when leaders like Dr. Ruffin, who so unselfishly put their name and position to their side and determine that it's more important to collaborate and partner and not worry about the credit, but focus on helping those who need the help the most. That's the only way we're really going to make any progress.
This interconnectedness of the issues and the need to have the communities become partners in the research,
yes,
is really what has been driving this field. And I want to commend you for being here with us and shedding some insight into this very complex, very difficult issue, but that we must overcome.
I'm really hopeful that this is a beginning. A beginning of something major done across the federal government with a single goal.
So it's more than a matter of wiping out cancer, wiping out diabetes, wiping out hypertension. It's a matter of developing those research advances and those medical and behavioral advances that will mean that health disparities no longer exist. We know that in order to really make a dent in addressing health disparities, it's going to take collaborative, interdisciplinary approaches.
There really could not have been a better time to have a summit like this than right now.
This could never have happened without Dr. Ruffin's funding, without his vision that this kind of collaboration needed to occur.
And we need to bring new minds with new ideas to the table, people with different perspectives and experiences.
To me, the opportunity for health disparities is it gives us an opportunity to say we can be equal and excellent too.
And I commend the center for all of its attention to these details over the years in helping us to push that agenda forward and to narrow this gap for all Americans, really.
Government works best when they empower the people. We're here to empower the community.
We know that there is hope that a change will come.
As we continue to get more political will to support attention to these issues, as we continue to build a base of scholars and practitioners who have the skills to address these issues, I think that we can overcome health disparities in the future.
Because we're undergoing a very important change in this country. We have a new president coming in, Barack Obama, a minority in the classic sense, who is now the president, who will be the president of the United States. So I think it reflects how far we've come as a nation. When you talk about health, we need to now come along with that and come even farther than we've come now with regard to health as a society.
If we continue to do that, build on what we know, add new knowledge, actually inspire a national movement to be concerned about this issue, I think we'll have a bright future.
Working together, we will make our vision of inclusion a reality. Ensure health equity for all populations.
Oh, now I know the truth. The key to happiness, secret to a happy life, and a feeling of tenderness. But now I can see it. Clear as day, things are gonna get better one day. Ooh.
The elimination of health disparities will indeed take leadership, it will take vision, it will take creativity, it will take passion, and most of all, it will take partnership. I want to step back, though, for just a minute and allow me to bring to the podium someone that I want to introduce to some of you. But for many of these concepts, the concept of partnership, the concept of collaboration, the creation of the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities at the NIH came under the leadership of a distinguished individual who I would like to specially recognize this morning before he has to leave. During his tenure as the NIH director, Dr. Harold Varmus initiated many changes in the conduct of intramural and extramural research programs. The creation of the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities, as you might guess, stimulated countless discussions, and a committee structure was put in place to set up the center. Those of us who know Harold Varmus, Dr. Varmus asked the tough questions. He wanted to ensure that the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities was not established as an isolated entity. Instead, his focus was on maintaining the spirit of collaboration that you saw in the video, that we had fostered as an office this kind of collaboration and partnership, and he wanted that to continue. He wanted to make sure that the trans-NIH nature of operating would fit well with the mission of the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities. A Nobel Prize co-recipient for studies on the genetic basis of cancer, today as president and CEO of Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, he continues to advance biological sciences to improve cancer care for all citizens. In keeping with his longtime commitment to improving health, he has helped to found and oversee the Ralph Lauren Center for Cancer Care and Prevention, a new cancer clinic in Central Harlem. At Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, he has created new programs for diversity and gender equity, including the Office of Diversity Programs in Clinical Care, Research, and Training, and the Women's Faculty Affairs Program. This summit is a testament to the success of Harold's vision. The seeds that he sowed, they worked. Certainly, the impression he made on me worked. All that we do today is built on the premise of partnership and collaboration, which he encouraged. Please join me now in honoring Dr. Harold Varmus for his leadership during those initial critical years leading up to the birth of the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities, a milestone in the NIH Minority Health and Health Disparities research effort. Harold, would you join me?
John, thank you very much for your kind words, and congratulations on this meeting, and thank you for your testament to our shared values of collaboration. As many of you know, I came to the NIH as director from an academic career focused on genes and cells, and during my time at the NIH learned from John and his colleagues and from the institute directors and their colleagues throughout the institutes about two major domains of inequity, the domains that often remain somewhat hidden from those of us who are focused on doing our science and advancing the frontiers of knowledge. And those two domains are the domestic health disparities you've been hearing about in the movie and the inequities in health that exist throughout the world that were spoken to occasionally in the movie. Since leaving the NIH, what I've learned here, or in the NIH, has influenced my life in two ways. I'd like to describe them extremely briefly and also give the audience two assignments. When I was at the NIH, I learned from Harold Freeman, who later became the director of the Office of Minority Health at the National Cancer Institute, about the difference in cancer outcomes and the low life expectancy and high degree of disease burden among residents of Harlem, both black and Hispanic. When I moved to New York to run Memorial Sloan Kettering, Harold and I teamed up with the help of money from Ralph Lauren, the designer, to build a clinic called the Ralph Lauren Center for Cancer Care and Prevention. At that center, we do chemotherapy, we do cancer screening, we provide education in cancer prevention methods. We teach the art of patient navigation, which Dr. Freeman has pioneered and which is now conducted in an institute, the Harold Freeman Patient Navigation Institute. I urge all of you who are coming to New York to come and pay a visit to this clinic, 124th Street and Madison Avenue, and to learn some of the realities of trying to practice health disparities care and research in a disadvantaged community. Learn about the difficulties in getting state funding for reimbursement for such activities and the cultural difficulties of educating and getting the participation of the surrounding communities that are so much in need. The second thing that I learned through conversations with Tony Fauci and many at the Fogarty International Center was about the enormous disparities in health throughout the world. And over the last several years, through activities in trying to build science in developing countries and studying the problems of health and poor economies in disadvantaged parts of the world, I've become extremely engaged in the question of how this country can foster better health globally. Over the last several years, the U.S. government has made increased federal commitments to combating AIDS and HIV throughout the world, new commitments to malaria and neglected tropical diseases. But these are insufficient and imbalanced. An analysis of the prospects for being more effective proponents and supporters of improved health globally has just been released by a study carried out by the Institute of Medicine, released yesterday and now available on the IOM website. And as a second assignment, I urge all of you to have a look at those recommendations and give the IOM its support in its efforts to advance the nation's effort to improve health around the world. Again, John, I want to thank you for a chance to address your audience. I wish you the very best in this gathering and in the future activities of your center as it continues to collaborate with all the institutes of the NIH. Thank you very much.
Pointed out to you earlier some of the leaders who paved the path for the accomplishments we are proud of today. There is another special individual who, through policy, made an indelible mark on the National Institutes of Health and the agency's success in advancing medicine. And that was the late Honorable Paul Grant Rogers. For 24 years, Paul served as a member of Congress from the state of Florida. He was chairman of the Subcommittee on Health and the Environment from 1971 until 1979. Because of his contributions today, we can enjoy things that we take for granted, things like clean air and clean water in this country. Paul was a driving force behind the passage of a number of significant pieces of legislation, including the National Cancer Act, which mobilized federal resources for what became known as the War on Cancer, the Health Manpower Training Act, the Research on Aging Act, which established the National Institute on Aging, the Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act, and the Energy Medical Service Act, and many others. After leaving Congress, Paul joined the law firm of Hogan and Hartson, where he helped to create and expand its healthcare practice. He also served as chairman of the board of Research America. Those of us within the NIH community who have been around for some time recall Paul's influence and support for the doubling of the NIH budget to advance science and medicine. In 2000, by an act of Congress, the main plaza at the National Institutes of Health was designated as the Paul G. Rogers Plaza, a notable mark of distinction. After leaving Congress, Paul continued his fight for equity in health. Following the release of the Institute of Medicine's 2006 report entitled Examining the Health Disparities Research Plan of the National Institutes of Health, Unfinished Business, the NCMHD Advisory Council recommended the development of a response report. An NCMHD extramural committee of scientists and policy leaders, including members of the IOM, was established to develop the report. Paul agreed to co-chair that committee. When he appeared before the NCMHD Advisory Council to present the committee's recommendation, he made it a point of reminding Dr. Ilya Zuhuni, the NIH director at the time, of the legislative authorities of the NCMHD and responsibilities of the NIH for health disparities. Paul passed away in October of 2008. And because of his policy influence and impact on science, I'm humbled to dedicate the first NIH Science of Eliminating Health Disparities Summit in memory of my friend, the late Honorable Paul Grant Rogers, also known as Mr. Health. I'm sure my NIH colleagues would agree that this is quite a fitting tribute. Paul had a maxim that he would repeat, and he would repeat it three times in a row, that I'd like to share with you. He would say, with emphasis, without research, there is no hope. Without research, there is no hope. And without research, there is no hope. And I would add that without Paul's leadership and commitment to health, we would not have been able to achieve what we have in science and medicine at the National Institutes of Health. What I plan to do is to ask someone who knows Paul very well. I would ask Dr. Roger Bozier and both Mary Woolley as well, who know Paul very well, to come and join me at the podium at this time and to say whatever they might in this case. But one of the things that I would like to be able to do and to have both Roger and Mary to do on behalf of the NIH at some later date is that I think that the program booklet, and I hope you agree, is a well-done booklet. And I want to have all of the institute directors and office directors at the National Institutes of Health to sign it. And once that have been signed, I will ask Roger and Mary to present that to Becky Rogers as a tribute from us, all of us here at NIH in his honor. So Roger, would you join me? Mary?
Well, good morning, and when you're retired, you know, you don't have to do anything. So when John said you do have to say something, I knew it had to be short, but I didn't know what it would be except for thank you on behalf of Mrs. Rogers. But I got something in the email, you know, one of those videos, and I opened it up. It's from a friend of mine from Canada who has been coaching me, I guess, all my life with videos and other messages. Beautiful scenes emerged as we went through this of Canadian lakes and mountains and streams. And then you'd press a button and poetry would be up there or a few words. And it came to one six-word message. It came in three words at a time. First three words were aspire to inspire. I thought that was pretty good. And then the next three words were before you expire. So I thought, my God, my friend knows something I don't know. But then I thought about it and said, you know, if Paul But when I think about Paul Rogers, we always think about the hope for research, etc. But what I think about, in fact, is that this aspire to inspire was probably the first thing he said every morning to his wife and when he got up. Because when I really reflect on the times I saw him in the flesh over the past 20 years, in every instance, I came away feeling inspired. And inspired to go out and promote research and advocate it, good research. And in this instance, he would be delighted to be here today and to see this. And I think what he would say if he were here was aspire to inspire, and each of us, ourselves, and those we meet, to really invest and do more and do better in the world of health disparities research and ultimately the reduction and elimination of health disparities. So I'm very happy on behalf of the family, who I know would appreciate and do appreciate the significance of having everybody sign something and kind of dedicating this conference to Mr. Rogers here. So thank you very much.
I would only add to what Rogers said so well that I know that the Rogers family is deeply appreciative of the honor that this meeting and all its attendees shows to Paul. Paul was a force for life, for hope, and for health. He was absolutely relentless in accomplishing those goals. And not only when he got up in the morning did he inspire others to aspire, and himself among them, he also got to work. And he would often, pretty much every day, call me and others and lay out a plan for the day of how to make things happen. And I really think that his legacy endures through action-oriented summit meetings like this one that go beyond recognition and taking note of accomplishments of the past, but result in making commitments to make a difference for the future. That's what Paul Rogers is all about, and this is a lovely tribute to him. Thank you. This has really been an inspiring morning. The video, which speaks to the commitment of the Department of Health and Human Services on health disparities, the special recognition of Dr. Harold Varmus, and the dedication of the summit to the late Paul Rogers. All of this suggests that you have a lot to look forward to over the next few days. But now I would like to call Dr. Ruffin back to the podium to introduce our next speaker, the acting NIH director, Dr. Kington.
Thank you, Mary. I'm pleased to introduce to you Dr. Reynard S. Kington, who was named acting director of the National Institutes of Health on October 31st, 2008. Following the departure of Dr. Ilya Zuhuni. Prior to assuming this role for the past 5 years, Dr. Kington has served as the Deputy Director of the National Institutes of Health. In that capacity, he shared in the overall leadership, policy direction, and coordination of the National Institutes of Health biomedical research and research training programs. Coming from the National Center for Health Statistics of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Kington is very familiar with the statistics on minority health and health disparities. Having served on the NCMHD Advisory Council as an ex officio member, a Associate Director of NIH for Behavioral and Social Science Research, Acting Director of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, and through his own research, such as the role of social factors and determinants of health, he understands the type of research that has to be done to address health disparities. At this time, it gives me great pleasure to present to you Dr. Renard Kington.
Thank you, John, for that kind introduction. It's a pleasure for me to be here today. On behalf of the National Institutes of Health, I want to welcome all of you to this summit on the science of eliminating health disparities. As John and the video suggested, it's clearly a summit whose time has come. And to echo the theme of the last month or so, it's been a long time coming. Certainly, members of the Trans-NIH committee that had been planning the summit would be justified in thinking that by a long time, I'm referring to the many months that they've been devoted to ensuring that this event would happen and achieve its aims. And to those in the audience and on the stage whose efforts gave us the National Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities, as well as its predecessor, the Office of Research on Minority Health before that, they might also well conclude that I'm referring to the time of the last two decades when so many changes have occurred at the agency. And to those of you who have given so much time and effort to the cause of bringing science to bear on the difficult problem of eliminating health disparities in this country, we are clearly all in your debt. But in this instance, I'm referring to a span of time that is longer than two or even 20 years. Over a century ago, in 1896, Atlanta University conducted its first conference entitled Conference for the Study of the Negro Problem, which in many ways might be considered a predecessor to this summit. That year, in 1896, a newly minted Harvard PhD set up shop in Philadelphia's 7th Ward to conduct what would become a pioneering sociological study. W.E.B. Du Bois published his study under the title The Philadelphia Negro, which included a specific chapter on health, of note, that included a discussion of the social factors that might account for the poor status of health of African Americans at that time in the 7th Ward of Philadelphia. Soon after Du Bois completed his research, Atlanta University brought him to that school with the promise of putting him in charge of the annual conference to address the problems of the African American population in the country at the time. In Atlanta, Du Bois pressed to move the conference in an ever more scientific direction. He had tremendous faith in the ability of science to solve the Negro problems, as they were called then, problems of disparities between black and white populations that ranged from economics and education to morbidity and mortality. This was, however, a time not only of deep racism, but also of growing scientific racism. The belief that such disparities were grounded almost exclusively in biology. Du Bois rejected such arguments and firmly held to his conviction that progress could be made, but it could only be made by following scientific methods. He wrote, "The right to enter this field undisturbed and untrammeled will depend largely on the attitude of science itself. Students must be careful to insist that science as such, be it physics, chemistry, psychology, or sociology, has but one simple aim, the discovery of truth." His concluding argument could serve as a charge for our efforts to integrate science and policy in practice in the elimination of health disparities today. He wrote, "Only by rigid adherence to the true object of the scholar can statesmen and philanthropists of all shades of belief be put into possession of a reliable body of truth which may guide their efforts to the best and largest success." By the early decades of the 20th century, the U.S. Public Health Service, which was the parent institution of the National Institutes of Health, had entered the heated debates about the nature and causes of health disparities in this country. Not all public health service investigators saw things from Du Bois' perspective. But one who did, was John Trask. He was Assistant Surgeon General of the Public Health Service. And in 1916, he argued that, quote, with economic and industrial progress of the colored population, its death rate will gradually approach nearer to that of the white population, unquote. Yet future trends are notoriously difficult to predict, as scientists know well. Writing just 2 decades after Trask's 1916 positive prediction, another investigator from the Public Health Service, Clark Tibbetts, adopted a similar stance on social solutions to health disparities, but the more equitable future that seemed so attainable in 1916 had by 1937 receded into a far more distant future. He wrote, the prospect of improvement for Negro health that would result from changes in the economic and occupational environment is much less optimistic. It seems inescapable that low incomes derived from unskilled occupations will show a large degree of prevalence among Negroes for a long time, end quote. And so we have learned. It's been a long time coming. In the decades between then and now, much has changed. Our American society has changed. Our concept of diversity has itself diversified. Within that expanded definition, the umbrella of health disparities has come to cover an ever-expanding group of people. The issue is quite literally no longer black and white. The large growth of Hispanic populations and Asian populations, the unique challenges of health of Native Americans, the growing heterogeneity within the African-American population with the growth of recent immigrants, have forced the scientific community to broaden its thinking and approaches to understanding and addressing health disparities. Further, the power of our science has grown tremendously, but we know all too well that science, too, can be misused. And we also know that the power of science must be guided by vigilant humility and persistent humanity. We now have at our disposal more nimble and nuanced methods for studying health disparities and for understanding their causes. We have expanded the scope of policy studies, and we are supported in our efforts by institutions such as NCMHD that both embody our resolve and give it voice and direction. Look around you. The very popularity of this summit, the convergence of peoples and institutions that it has affected, allows us to believe that we are finally in a position to move forward with science and policy and practice of eliminating health disparities in a way that would have made W.E.B. Du Bois, whose photo I keep over my desk to remind me of the distance traveled, would have been proud. To that end, it's my great pleasure to announce today the approval of an intramural research program at the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities to complement its extensive extramural research activities. Intramural research at NIH, that is research that takes place on the NIH campus by NIH scientists, takes advantage of our unique research environment, including sustainable funding, unparalleled human intellectual capital, and premier research facilities that encourages innovative science. The NIH intramural program is a venue for high-risk, high-impact research and supports the agency's ability to respond rapidly to public health emergencies, as well as to conduct long-term research on complicated problems such as health disparities. It also serves as an important vehicle for the international research collaborations needed to accomplish global health goals. The NCMHD Health Disparities Intramural Research Program will conduct state-of-the-art research focusing on the links between biological and non-biological determinants of health and health disparity populations. It will create training and mentorship opportunities to grow intramural researchers focused on health disparities research, including those from health disparities populations. And it will contribute a pool of early stage and seasoned investigators that will enhance the diversity of scientists and research disciplines comprising the intramural program at NIH. As we look forward to a future in which everyone in this nation has the same likelihood of a healthy and long life, we can be confident that the CMHD intramural research program will contribute significantly toward creating that future. I'm pleased to welcome the NCMHD into the NIH intramural program, and I look forward to the center's contributions to strengthening the program. Again, we want to welcome all of you to this extraordinary summit that has taken a long time in coming, and I wish you a successful meeting over the next several days. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kington, and what an extraordinary announcement. Congratulations to the center as well. I now have the distinct pleasure of introducing one of the true gifts to the universe, Dr. Maya Angelou. She is a lifetime Reynolds Professor of American Studies at Wake Forest University in North Carolina, where the Center for Health Equity at the School of Medicine is named in her honor. As a poet, educator, historian, civil rights activist, producer, and director, Dr. Angelou travels the world spreading her legendary wisdom. She captivates her audiences lyrically with vigor, fire, and perception. She speaks French, Spanish, Italian, and West African Fanti. She has authored 12 best-selling books and numerous magazine articles, earning her Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award nominations. In 1993, Dr. Angelou became the second poet in United States history to have the honor of writing and reciting original work at the presidential inauguration. We are fortunate, indeed, to have her with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Dr. Maya Angelou. Oh, my goodness, thank you, Dr. Angelou. I'll never think about grace or grinning in the same way again. We thank you, Dr. Angelou, for teaching us to value ourselves and each other, to be composers, and to work for equity courageously. What a stimulating morning. Dr. Ruffin, I thank you for the honor of giving me the opportunity to serve as your host, and I congratulate you and the center and all of the NIH for a program that has already been extraordinary. John, I think you have a few words you want to say in closing.
The summit was made possible because of just numerous individuals and groups that work tirelessly on the planning, including the NCMHD staff, the members of the NIH Planning Committee, and all of the different subcommittees that you must know it took to plan this, the support of all the institutes and centers, all of the directors, the NIH Extramural Committee. There was a large committee of extramural people who helped in the planning, the Summit Global Health Committee, the Summit Awards Committee, and the many organizations and vendors who supported and executed, including the Foundation for the National Institutes of Health and the NIH Medical Arts, all of these people working as a team to make this happen. This was a true work of collaboration and partnerships. And thanks to all of you, and have a productive summit. So, Mary, you may want to go over some of the activities that will take place over the following days.
With pleasure. I have been asked to just touch on some of the highlights of what you have to look forward to. There are four plenary sessions scheduled, starting with the first one just in a few minutes at 10:15 on the intersection of science and policy, moderated by former Surgeon General Dr. David Satcher. At 11:45 today, there will be a keynote address by Dr. Kenneth Moritsugu entitled Charting a New Course for Health Disparities, Finding Your Niche. Breakout sessions will take place from 1:15 to 4:30 p.m. each day, followed by exhibit and poster sessions in the Maryland Ballroom from 4:30 to 6 p.m. On Wednesday, tomorrow, Governor Howard Dean will deliver a keynote address on perspectives on health care reform, eliminating health disparities. That will be at 8 a.m. At 8:30 tomorrow is the plenary session on the intersection of science and practice, moderated by Dr. Barbara Alving, the director of the National Center for Research Resources at the NIH. Dr. Stephen Katz, director of the National Institute of Arthritis and Musculoskeletal and Skin Diseases, will moderate the third plenary session on the intersection of science, practice, and policy at 10:15 a.m. tomorrow. Congressman Elijah Cummings will deliver the keynote address on policy implications for eliminating health disparities at 12 noon. During the evening, an honor ceremony recognizing some of the leaders and rising stars in health disparities research will take place. The reception will start at 6:30 p.m. and banquet at 7:30 p.m., sponsored by the Foundation for the National Institutes of Health. On Thursday, the final day of the summit, we will begin at 8 a.m. with a keynote address on science and industry delivered by Dr. Evelyn Lewis of Pfizer. The final plenary session on the role of media and policy in eliminating health disparities will follow with George Strait, Director of Communications for NCMHD, as moderator. That panel will lead right into a town hall session where everyone will have a chance to engage in dialogue on some of the most poignant issues related to health disparities. It will be an opportunity for you to make recommendations that will help shape the future health disparities research agenda for the NIH and also the National Health Care Reform Plan for the nation. This will be considered as one of the health care community discussions that Senator Daschle, the DHHS Secretary Designate, has asked communities around the country to convene. This is an extraordinary summit meeting with enormous opportunity and the promise of really making a difference in a profound way for the health of the nation and the health of the world. It's a great honor to have been with you this morning, and I extend my best wishes for a successful summit. Thank you.